Blog Talk Radio.
Band U2, right? They've basically got this one sound, haven't they? The Edge, yeah, right. So, without these effects, they're nothing, right? This is all effects. Even a troll like Bigger can recreate them. I'll give you a demonstration of a catastrophic technical failure at a U2 gig, right? We'll be right back.
And welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, Matthew Aaron on Facebook, and that was the very funny Bill Bailey and his bit on you, too. I am joined by Alex Luisi for the moment. Say hello, Alex.
What's up?
Oh, this is such a bad idea.
It's Friday, baby.
You like Bill Bailey, Alex?
Yes, I do. He's pretty funny.
Oh, he's funny. Talented guy.
Very talented.
I wanted to play some clips of his before he came on. This one I like a lot. I'm going to play this right now. I'm not even going to set it up. This is good.
You know, when I was during the Gulf War, we were watching all these news items from around the world, and some of the news themes I was fascinated by, particularly the American ones, you know, they just sound like daytime soap opera themes. The CBS Evening News, this is their theme tune. And now some puppies will lick your face. But the BBC, I think they've gone too far the other way. The BBC news scene sounds like someone's of apocalyptic rave.
Pretty funny.
Oh, God.
You know, he's really smart. He's a really funny guy. Obviously, he's talented as a musician. He's a composer as well. But, you know, he does strictly stand-up as well. And he is one of the funniest acts around right now. And the great thing about Bill Bailey is he doesn't come to America often. And he's coming to America in the next coming weeks. He's going to be in New York September 14th through the 17th, Chicago on the 18th, and Boston on the 20th. And it's an act you're going to want to check out, Bill Bailey, The Dandelion Mind.
House of Blues.
Yeah, House of Blues. That's right. That's right. But he doesn't come to the U.S. often. I mean, I think he wants to. I think he's going to be doing that more. But, you know, so this is going to be a rare appearance for people to check out someone who's really going to blow up. And he's already blown up in England. He's huge. He's huge in the UK.
Huge, huge.
And that's not a weight joke. Well, you know what I love about Bill? Him and I have the same hair. Have you noticed?
Yeah, long and wavy. And
well, and then we got the five head going on.
It's almost like the FUPA thing.
Well, his DVD special in 2004 was called Part Troll.
Come on.
And I think I'm the other part.
Nice.
Oh, you figured out the front door, huh? Very good. Very good. You doing okay, Lee? You're in a rush? You in a hurry? Lee Capreas has joined us, but he's a little busy urinating. But you know, you also may know Bill from Hot Fuzz. Maybe you saw Hot Fuzz. What just fell on the floor? Lee's dropping shit on top of it. Black Books, which was his TV series, which I've seen. I've not seen all the episodes. I've not gotten like that much time to watch it all, but I have seen the show. But I do know people who do watch that show religiously. My friend Laura says it's the funniest fucking show ever. He's a great actor. He's a funny guy. I'm really looking forward to having him on. I wanted to play some more of his stand-up, though, because I don't want people to think, you know, that he's just the song type. He's got some funnies too. But you know that I don't know what to do with Bill Bailey here. There's so much Bill Bailey I could play. which Bill Bailey clip do we want here? How about Insect Nation? Do we like that one? You saw that in the orchestra.
Yeah, that was
one.
Good.
A remarkable guide to the orchestra. Lee, introduce yourself, Lee,
hey,
real quick.
Well, there's Alex. Yeah, Lee Capreas, hello.
Yeah, not quite your filling.
It's okay.
Fills half you.
Oh, God, I had to piss. I had to piss before I sat down in here and plugged in.
Traffic was bad. Huh?
Traffic's
always bad. It was bad, but I left a little early from work. I dashed out of there. And when I was going, I think I almost wore your porcelain down to quartz. That's how bad I had to piss. Oh, man. The 70s cop thing in that is really good.
Yes. I played his YouTube bit. I opened up with a U2 song and then played his bit during the song. And then I also played, while you were gone since you missed this, I also played his NBC News, BBC News theme.
Oh, yeah.
The Apocalyptic Rave.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's funny stuff. So who wants to hear about Bill Bailey talking about sexuality?
Play it.
That's good. We want to hear about his sexuality.
Are there any men in? Any women?
Yes!
You see, there's this crisis in masculine identity at the moment. Women totally at home with their sexuality. I am woman, woman, I, woman. Men, someone else will shout out, I'll be all right. All right, are there any blokes in?
Yes!
You see, that's a term that men feel more comfortable with, isn't it? Bloke, blokey, bloke, 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 bloke. It's a kind of friendly term. Oh, he's a lovely bloke, he's a nice bloke, blokey, bloke, bloke. I'm a bloke, you're a bloke, 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 bloke. It doesn't pose any sort of, you know, kind of unnecessary demands on us as men, you know. Bloke, that's just basically, well, carry stuff, don't get in the way. Blokey, bloke, bloke. Man, that's all kind of other things, isn't it? That's nobility, gallantry, wisdom. That conjures up some image of a bloke in a cardigan and a pipe saying, cover up those table legs, mother, they're inflaming thy sexual ardour. Well, I am a man. Ah. You can't live up to that. You know, car manufacturers are very cunning. They're able to pitch the names of their cars at this sort of dream that men have of how they'd like to be as opposed to how they are. You get all cars named after things like Land Cruiser. You can have Focus, Charisma. You can be a Grand Cherokee, a Super Thunder Patrolmeister. You don't get cars named after what blokes are really like. I've got the new Vauxhall Disappointment. Did it come in the colour you want? No. Oh, brilliant. The Ford Clumsy, the Nissan Moody. You won't see these vehicles. Well, women have had been enfranchised for the last 20, 30 years. You've had feminism, neo-feminism, proto-feminism, neo-proto-classico-feminism, rustico-feminism. That's feminism in the countryside. And men, we've got nothing. No masculism, no masculist movement. You know, we're always constantly told to get in touch with ourselves. Blokes aren't going to get in touch with themselves. No, I'm just going to pretend I'm not in. I'm not going to get in touch with myself. La, la, la. Women have had slogans, you know, when a woman says no, she means no. When a man says yes, it means he probably hasn't understood the question. He's just sort of winging it, yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. What was that? Whatever you say, you know. Women are very cunning. They're always very, very cunning at exploiting our weaknesses. They're always saying things like, what did I just say? I don't know, listening. Before that, not. Before that, you're. But men, we're sort of conditioned not to admit defeat or failure. You'll never see a bloke take his car down to the mechanic. So the mechanic says, what's wrong with it? The bloke says, I don't know, it's broken. What's wrong with it? Just make it work. It's broken. Oh. They just make up any old nonsense. Well, it's the starter motor, the gasket handle, I reckon. It's all looping down through the grub nuts. Can't understand it. I put all new mats in, all new rubber mats. firing up through the St. Elmo's pipe trench, you know. There's a lot of swamp around the tortoise heads and dolphin points are all flooded up through the donkey flange, you know. The mechanic's looking, nodding, going, I don't know either.
He makes Tim Allen seem a little more Neanderthal, doesn't he?
A little bit. I don't know. There was a period when like Tim Allen's stand-up was kind of huge and like guys were doing that. Guys were doing that grunt a lot. This was before. This was before he got Home Improvement, which is like one of the few sitcoms that I've ever watched a lot.
People love the grunt.
Yeah,
people love the grunt.
That was part of the very small anti-PC backlash that happened in the mid '90s. You got hours of that.
I got hours of Tim Allen laughing.
Yeah.
That and Fran Drescher.
That's funny.
You got to prepare for that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, on that show, he did a really good job playing a marginally talented guy who has his own TV show.
Yeah, he did really good at it.
Yeah.
And he has another one coming out.
I kid Tim Allen.
In the fall.
I think he's good. But
he doesn't like kidding.
No.
As Ricky Gervais can tell you.
No.
First-hand experience, Ricky can tell you. Tim's not a kidder.
No.
Not big on the kidding.
No. Which is weird, because he's a comedian.
Humor should be harmless.
Right.
Humor hurts nobody.
Right.
And you know what, though? I like... it's funny bringing that up, though. Bailey.
Yeah.
Harmless humor.
Yeah.
But
there
are no victims in his comedy.
Well, no. He has a point, though. Like, he's not just, you know what? We sure hate shopping with the ladies, fellas. You know, he says something. Just because you're not swearing... I love it. Somebody heard that. Somebody heard that, like an executive, and they're like, "Let's get that guy his own show in his act."
I wonder if that is what happened.
Yeah.
They love the grunt.
Give him a sitcom.
You know what? But I will say Bill Bailey did this to me. Learning about him and following him now, and watching all his stuff, I thought I was tired of the man versus women diatribes in comedy.
Yeah.
It was funny.
Yeah. Well, no, if you have a fresh angle on it.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. Then.
I want a Nissan Moody, by the way.
Yeah. I could see you drive.
That car start and stop at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And slows down when it feels like it.
Right. If your heart's not in your destination, you're not going to get
it. Does condensation come out of the air conditioning vent?
Yeah, right.
I want a Nissan movie.
The window's fogging up, and it's not even humid.
Well, once again, I believe it's a Sunday. Bill Bailey will be in town for the Dandelion Mind. And the Dandelion Mind is going to be his act. I have heard him speak. I think this one's going to be more strictly stand-up than music, which is cool. Mm-hmm. Because obviously he has done stuff with huge orchestras, and he's a composer, and he's a talented guy.
He is, and he's been around on the scene quite a while. I mean, I remember like my ultra cool friend showed me his video like years ago. He lives in Madrid.
He's been around since 88, 89.
Yeah. He's put in the time.
But he's in the UK.
Yeah.
So America hasn't quite... It takes us a while to catch
up. It takes us a while, yeah.
We don't like looking for talent anymore.
No.
We don't like scouting, as television will show you nowadays.
Right.
Well, you know, this comes back to the conversation we've had a million times. And why not have it a million and one? The reason no one makes it from Chicago anymore is because the only show that scouts here is SNL, really.
Yeah.
And SNL takes one or two people a year, every 2 years,
every
whatever.
Few years.
Most of them are writers, so you don't see them or hear about them.
Right.
But honestly, the television and film business no longer scouts, really, which I think is a bad move on their part.
It is.
I think it's a really bad move, but they don't scout.
It is, because the scouting is where you get the people that are really original, though. That's,
right.
You don't have people coming at you... Nobody really very interesting or original is going to walk into, go into the...
They're forcing us to go to L.A.
Right, right.
Yeah, which, you know, whatever.
That's fine.
But I do want to say Bill Bailey, the 14th through the 17th, is in New York at the Skirball Center. The 18th, he's in Chicago at the House of Blues. the 19th he's in Toronto at the Panasonic Theater, and the 20th he's in Boston at the House of Blues, and then he's got he's back overseas November, December playing everywhere.
Yeah.
I had no idea how huge this guy was in the UK, though, even, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he's a giant star.
But I figured out why.
Why? Why is that?
According to the CIA fact chart, which Bill Bailey pointed me out to, Oregon is bigger than the United Kingdom.
Oregon?
Oregon.
Yeah. Oregon. Yeah.
Is it Oregon or Oregon?
I think it's technically Oregon. Origami? I'm not one of those people.
Origami?
I'm not going to be one of those people like, excuse me, Oregon.
Excuse me. It's Oregon.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I will submit that the city of Portland is my pick for the number one my most favorite place.
You've
in
said that before. You like Portland.
Love the Portland. Yeah.
You're a fan.
Yeah.
Well, nope. That's nice. Someone's got to be.
Yeah.
Someone. And I'm happy
me and the director of the Zero Effect.
You know what? Everyone takes a charity project, and yours isn't all that bad.
No, it's not bad.
You want to hear Bill Bailey's Twitter song?
Oh, yes.
Since we love Twitter so much. I usually don't use our Twitter much. You know, I let Caesar
you use your
and
Twitter.
Tobias. I have other people use my Twitter.
Oh. Oh,
how
man.
Terrible does that
You're
sound?
Like one of those people who
You're
doesn't
that
even...
guy.
No, but I'll tell you the truth. I do. If you get a response from me and it has my name in it, it's from me.
Uh-huh.
That's how I differentiate it.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone's figured it out, but that's, yeah. They're like, why is he randomly
when
put his
name
in certain
When it's my birthday, I'm
going to
get something
tweets.
From you. Happy for birthday from all of us at the Matthew Aaron Show. It's just like
and if there's no name, it's not from me.
Right.
Someone else remembered your birthday. It was not me.
That's
They're
nice.
Covering for me. well, you know, I don't have time for Twitter. It's so... Dude, how does Gary Shandling, Albert Brooks, and Steve Martin have so much time to sit around and come up with tweets?
I don't know.
Something going on.
Something
fishy.
Yeah.
Sorry. There just is. So you got guys like Alan Spencer who are writers, and they probably take breaks from writing and write 50 fantastic fucking tweets. If you are not following Alan Spencer on Twitter, Mr. Alan Spencer, you are missing out.
Okay.
The guy's a genius.
Okay.
He is one of the number one ghostwriters in Hollywood.
Oh.
When Transformers needs to be rewritten, and he doesn't put his name on it, he does the rewrite. Or, you know, a lot of big movies that it's a nice job. It pays well. John Sayles.
Yeah.
Is actually one of the number one ghostwriters. A lot of people don't know about.
No, John Sayles does a lot of writing. I
yeah,
know that.
But people don't know he's one of the number one ghostwriters.
Wow.
His name is not on a lot of stuff he has done.
Wow.
But here's the Bill Bailey Twitter song.
Ted, I'm livid. Anyway, this is an internet love song. Whilst vaguely watching you nibble your sandwich, I was gripped by an overwhelming sense of utter futility. You Twitter, oh my God, I'm having a sandwich, like it's thrilling. 4 seconds later, 19 followers Twitter, what filling? One of them is me, I say, is it carrot and hummus? You say, wow, there must be a special connection between us. We meet from a tweet, but it's not that appealing. Because unlike Lionel Richie, we're not dancing on the ceiling. I caress you like a curious wasp. You embrace me like a spiteful pheasant. It's quite unpleasant. Ow, my eye, and then you shit on my head. Do we really love? Do we really care? Let's sort this out with an online questionnaire. But in the box mark, do you really want to be with me? We both tick, neither agree nor disagree. I don't hate you, it's not fate. It's just we're not that great. I don't dislike you, I just unlike you. For your information, I am not laughing out loud. Or even laughing my ass off. Or even R-O-F-L-Y-S-S-T. Rolling on the floor laughing, yet somehow still typing.
That's good. And I like how it kind of sounds like a sea shanty.
I love that. Yeah. It did. It did a little bit.
Arr. Oh, it's good.
Back to the Twitter thing, though, real quick. Caesar's like, it's the show's Twitter. Look, that's where I get all my personal tweets. I haven't signed on my personal Twitter in over a year.
I have this thing where I don't want to send any tweets out unless I think they're good.
Yeah.
And if I don't come up with something in a week that's good, I don't tweet.
I'm a Facebook guy. I trust my friends to put up with my bad jokes, but not strangers.
140 characters is kind of hard for me.
You are a windbag.
Yeah, I know. That's true. 420, I can keep it to that. At least you can write notes there, little memos and all that. But
we do the follow Friday. I try to do that sometimes.
I did mention that I follow a former James Bond of one movie, George Lazenby.
Yes, you did mention that.
He has a very amusing Twitter.
You did mention that.
Alan Spencer, all right.
Yeah, you were saying George Lazenby's amusing.
Yeah.
I don't believe it, but, you know, I should probably check that out myself.
Yeah.
Bill Bailey. So,
you guys could be related, I think.
I love how I told you that. We talked about that at the beginning of the show.
Oh,
we have the
man.
Same hair.
I know, but it's...
We kind of look trolly.
Yeah. You just look like you're like him from the past, like if you came to warn... If he came to warn you, like, Matt, don't go down this path, or you'll want... You know what I mean?
I mean, of course, that guy would be British.
Right.
Just to sound more intelligent
more
about
intelligent,
it. I wouldn't
yeah.
believe an American fat troll that came down.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, Matt. What? Matt, don't do that.
Matthew.
You're
heading down the wrong path.
You know, I'm like, what do we even talk to Bill about? I guess we're going to... I want to focus on the Dandelion Tour here, the Dandelion Mind, but he has another one of those historic careers.
Yeah.
Like, just... Tons of things have gone on.
Oh, he'll have stuff to say.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
Crazy Americans.
Yanks, Alex.
Sorry. Yanks.
Yeah. Oh, we're back to Yanks.
No. You don't like that term. Sorry. It's their term.
Alex, do your really bad British impression.
Oh, hello, Matt.
So he's like half Australian.
That's kind of like the sprightly chimney sweep British person.
And I hear
Jolly good yip chip cheree. That kind of.
In college too, I had a bunch of roommates from the UK too. So it's not good.
Yeah.
They told me it was horrible.
See, I like the straight up Cockney, but the dignified Michael Caine Cockney. That's a good British accent. Did you see the movie The Trip?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
yes,
is Michael Caine
Steve Coogan?
Yeah.
And,
spot on.
Yeah. They did Michael Caine impressions.
Oh.
They didn't. The whole movie's about impressions, pretty much.
They did more Michael Caine impressions in that movie, and after that, I was kind of like. Trying to do them myself in my car.
Bill Bailey has a song called Cockney Rock. You almost hit a family doing your Michael Caine.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention, and I was just saying, I have to do the impression like this, because if I don't do it... Yeah, and I was trying, and like I wasn't paying attention, and I just like swerved. I was in, you know, I was by Clark and Belmont. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Bill Bailey has a great song called Cockney Rock,
mm-hmm.
and you would like that a lot. I don't know if you've heard that one yet.
I might have.
It's a little ditty. A little ditty from Bill.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go see his live show. But here's the deal. I have no time ever to do anything anymore.
Right.
And I think Pat Tobias just gave me some attitude because I requested 1 to 2 shows a month in October for a week in October.
Uh-huh.
So I can get ready to move.
Right.
And, you know, other things.
He's got a lot to worry about.
Pat, take it easy.
Pat was a little miffed.
Requested.
Like, one show a week in October? I'm like, yes, Pat.
Stop doing that voice.
I said two if it's A-list. Yeah. That's the only voice he does. Yeah.
Hello! But I am Pat.
I love his hellos.
Yeah.
Hello!
That's okay.
He has a killer Mickey Mouse.
He does?
Sure.
Oh.
I still don't believe he's real.
Well, I of course think he's real, but it's fun to joke about how he might not be real because I've never seen him.
He could be behind
Caesar's screaming at me. We should only do one show a week in October, and the caveat was I told Pat that if it's an A-lister, 2 shows.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Can't turn down the A-listers.
Well, you've got about how many other projects?
I got some wieners to suck.
Yeah.
If it's A, it's got to come right down the pipeline.
Right.
How many projects do I got?
Yeah.
I have.
So you know you're busy. You can't be doing this. We've done shows every day this week so far, but
I have three to four scripts to write.
Yeah.
We got those four shows we're filming on Sunday to edit.
Right.
And I got to prep to move.
I'm getting killed on gas coming out here.
I know. I got to finish my resume, my resume. I got to go out to L.A.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a busy man.
Yeah.
Busy, busy, busy. I wanted to go. I actually, no one knows this. Actually, nobody knows this. But I actually was going to go do a play before. I don't know why that's funny.
Alex,
what's he actually,
for fags. Luisi there was giggling when you said that you were a thespian.
All right. Well, you know what? I've done a few plays. I'm actually a talented little actor. Thank you.
What have you been in? I'm curious about this.
I just did John Patrick Shanley last year.
Yeah.
I did Guys and Dolls.
Okay.
What did we do? Doubt.
Oh, you did Doubt.
Yes.
Who were you in Doubt?
Well. They're younger people, so I was the priest. But there was they're younger people. What are you gonna do?
Huh.
They didn't cast older. It was done. It was at the Piven Theater.
Uh-huh.
I did a bunch at the Piven Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other thing I did recently? There was another John Patrick Shanley, and I totally forget.
Yeah.
This is like 2 years ago. I forget. But I got invited back to go do something at Piven. And then I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
It ends in October, so I could technically do it. There's no fucking way.
Oh.
Like, I hate studying lines and remembering things. You guys know my memory shit.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
What? So I there's no way I could pull anything like
I'm
that
I'm actually
off.
Good at lines, but I'm not good at all the ins and outs.
Well, I'm good at lines when I have nothing else going on in my life.
Yeah.
If I can focus fully on a role, I'm great. But if I have other things going on, other projects, totally out of it.
So will you be sitting down and like trying to get your lines going and reading them and trying to say them and you just can't memorize them because you've got a lot of noise?
What
to
I
hear?
Try to do is have no life when I'm doing a play or a musical.
Okay.
Any kind of acting, I try to have no life but that.
That makes sense.
And that means not even going out.
Commit fully or you won't be able to give 100%.
I talk very briefly to people when I'm doing something. I don't want to have big conversations and stuff. Because I'm totally always in the mode.
Yeah.
I need to get over that because it's stupid.
Well,
Walton Goggins and I talked about it. It's stupid. He does it too.
Yeah.
He does the same exact thing. And that's why I said to him, oh, you must have no friends on set. Because you don't. You don't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And you're like, I got to do this role. I got to do it right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just you're insulating yourself.
Because
you want to do good.
Yeah. You brought it up, though. The other things you have to remember is not just the lines. You have to inhabit this character.
Right.
And you have to remember your emotions that you're going to be using.
And what all the guests have been saying, which is listening and paying attention to the temperature of the scene and all that.
I got to tell you, listening is the worst when you're acting with someone you hate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've acted with people. Okay, I've...
All I could think of is that motherfucker.
Oh, you know what? We got a phone call, so we'll get back to this.
Okay.
Remind
me
after the interview.
Oh, my God.
Hello, you're on the Matthew Aaron Show. Who am I speaking with?
Oh, hello. Bill Bailey here.
Oh, it is my twin, Bill Bailey.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you.
I heard you've been traveling a lot. You're very tired, probably. A little busy, huh?
A little bit disorientated, you know. I don't know quite what time zone I'm in, or country, or dimension. But
Are the people wearing clogs?
Yeah, people they've developed a new method of transport that's largely based on hovering. So I might be in the future. I don't know. I just had a chicken salad, so, you know, things haven't changed that much.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the dandelion mine. why am I dying?
Quick!
I want
Holger Nielsen, grab his back!
We're going to have to do it real quick.
Yeah.
He's choking to death!
Click your heels three times.
Grab him around the chest. Cough it up.
I'm not moving.
I did want to talk about it, but I also want to talk about, we've been talking about you on this show now for weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, I know Lee's on this page with me. You'll make a joke out of this, but we think you're legit. You're a genius, pal.
Thank you.
Yeah, very talented man. And I want to talk about the Dandelion Mine because you're coming to Chicago, which is our hometown,
September
18th. And you're,
oh, yeah.
And in New York, the 14th through the 17th, Toronto on the 19th, and Boston on the 20th. What made you come to America? What made you want to do this tour? Obviously, you probably want to come here more, but I promoted this for you as a rare appearance for you to catch you before you blow up like you're bigger than Gervais.
Yeah, well, you know what? I came to America 10 years ago. I did a show in New York, and it went very well, and the press seemed to like it. The people came, and I did 3 months, and then I did another 3 months. So I kind of lived in New York for 6 months doing this show, and it was great fun, and I really enjoyed the experience. I liked the American crowds. It was a bit of a challenge because, of course, nobody knew who I was, so I had to kind of rise up to the challenge, step up the game a little bit, up the game, be a bit sort of more on top of it, and kind of really be a bit sort of, reevaluate the whole notion of stand-up kind of playing to an audience that don't know who you are, so you have to kind of prove yourself. And I really liked that, and I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to come back next year, and I'm going to come back the year after that, and, just as I had to tune up. Anyway, I went back to the UK in 2002, and then I got a TV gig on a show called Nevermind the Buzzcocks, which is a kind of music panel show. And that was very successful, and that led to a lot of other stuff and a lot of sitcom work and TV and tours. And suddenly, I was kind of working all the time. And the American, adventure, that sort of got put on the back boiler a little bit. So now I've backed off a bit from the TV, and I'm choosing to do the things that I want to do, which I suppose is a kind of, it's a good position to be in. But one of the top of the list was coming back to the States. So this is long overdue. These gigs, I plan to come and do more because I like playing it.
Yeah, that's great. And I have a couple of friends that wanted me to let you know they think Black Books is one of the best shows ever.
Yeah.
Oh well, that's very kind.
Yeah, I'd imagine. I'm surprised they haven't remade that here, by the way, yet.
Right.
Or are they doing it? I don't know.
I don't know. Probably not.
You know what I love too? I had some friends that saw you at Bonnaroo this year. Is that accurate?
Really?
So,
yeah.
So how'd that go?
Oh man,
that was great. It was a blast. I love playing music festivals, and I've played a lot over the years.
Right.
And so we kind of eventually got it to happen, and what fun. I mean, for start, look, the main thing was it didn't rain. I mean, that's unheard of for me in a rock festival in Britain. normally it looks like something like a World War One trench, like the Somme or something. People are up to their armpits in mud. People actually get trench foot in festivals in Britain, Diseases that have long since kind of gone off the register kind of resurface in festivals there. And this was dry, sunny, people were friendly, we were looked after. It was great. It was some great bands. I saw Eminem, I saw Arcade Fire, My Morning Jacket, The Strokes. It was great. So it was great fun, and I kind of thought, there's a whole bunch of these festivals over here, and a big audience that largely people don't know. Then I'm not known to them, so it's a challenge for me. I like that.
It must be nice to you're reaching not only an American audience but a younger audience because that festival is putting out having more comedy shows now. And now my drug-taking friends who go down there are coming back and telling me, oh, they saw Aziz Ansari, and they saw whoever, And that's...
Well, that's why I was going to ask, Bill. Were you on the comedy stage or the music stage?
No, it was the comedy stage. There was a very smart comedy theater.
Yeah.
Which was air-conditioned and it had nice seating and good, it was beautifully set up, and... That was, I was really impressed with it, with the organization. I mean, I've been playing at the Glastonbury Festival probably, for 20 years. And when I first started, there were like 2,000 kind of, hippies sitting in mud watching comedy off their face. And you know, you could have been doing some fine-honed bit of whimsy or just, like, waving balloons around. They would have got the same reaction, you know. And so 20 years later, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed in Glastonbury, you know. It's still the same muddy tent. There's still the same people with, like, funny hats on and their face painted like a panther. But Bonnaroo was really organized. It was a big crowd. It was like 1,700 people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the kind of audience that, I mean, it's my sort of crowd, you know, the kind of festival crowd, music. Because a lot of my stuff is music-based, so there's like a lot of music references in it. So, you know, a festival crowd is kind of my ideal demographic in a way. So it was good to blast.
Well, you must add, I just think it's great that you did the Sonosphere this year and you were with Metallica and Megadeth and you're at the premier metal festival and here's Bill Bailey. I guess you and I kind of have a similar metal look.
You got the long hair.
We got the metal look.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Identical, by the way. Identical.
Oh, right. I regularly get mistaken for an employee in a guitar shop.
Yeah. Well, I think Lars Ulrich's hairline is receding a little faster than yours. So.
Oh,
yeah. That's it. Yeah, I often get the Lars. You're Lars. No, I'm not.
You should just go Napster.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's right. Napster. What an ass.
You know.
Yeah. I was on before Slipknot. I mean, that doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, Steve would have loved that. Too bad it's Steve's day off. But, Bill, I want to also, before we get to Dandelion, I did want to talk about one other thing. And I think people don't understand, may not know this about you in America, and they should. You are a fine actor. And for instance, you did Oscar on for The Odd Couple on in London. I mean, you do plays, you've done theater. I mean, what's that like for you? Is that enough? What is your, like, because you compose, you do comedy, you act. What's your love? What is it for you?
I know, stand up. I mean, comedy is my love, you know, and that's what I'll do till I'm sort of some kind of drooling, you know, half-wit. But, you know, being in plays and acting and films, it's a great way to. I'm lucky I'm able to do that. It mixes it up a bit because, you know, stand up, you know, it's kind of like by the very nature of it, it's quite a solitary profession. You know, you spend a lot of time in hotels. You spend a lot, you know, you're on stage. It's just you, and it's down to you. And obviously, you know, the highs are great. The buzz of it is terrific. But sometimes it's great to be part of a team, you know, like a bit of a collaborative process, like a film or a play, because then. You know, for one thing, the writing is the pressure's off. You know, someone else is taking the flak for that, and you just have to turn up, show up, and you know, be a turn, do a turn, and that is sometimes it's a great relief having just to do that. Focus on the performance and not about the writing and the joke and the bit and oh, do I say it like that? And you know, agonizing over the routines, you just have to do the lines. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Now, tell me about Dandelion Mind. Is this like your previous albums, like Park Troll? Or is this going to be more of you doing stand-up? Is it mixed with music still? What's going to be the deal?
Yeah, it's more of the same. It's a mix of a lot of things. It's like there's a sort of a loose theme of doubt that running through the whole thing about... You know, there's kind of a lot of personal stuff. There's it's a bit of political stuff. It's quite satirical. There's a lot of music in it. There's a lot of and also I incorporate kind of film and animation. I work with filmmakers and animators, and so there's like there's screens and films that interact with the stand-up. So it's kind of like there's a whole range of stuff. It's like a multimedia extravaganza. It's a cavalcade of whimsy.
I like that.
It's a carousel of fun, goofy delight.
It is, absolutely. It's a potpourri of observational-based trauma.
But I mean, Bill, I'm sure you've gotten this question a million times on your press tour here, but just for our audience, okay, obviously if they check you out, you have, you know, you do bits about being Cockney, you do bits about... sexuality that lean more towards a UK kind of slant. How do you change your comedy to be more American when you come and do a show here? Or do you?
Well, no. This particular show, I toured it around Australia, New Zealand. I've performed it a bit in the States already. I taught it around little tiny fishing villages in northern Scotland, right? Now, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, if it'll go over there, then pretty much, you know, anywhere, really. I mean, the idea for this show was I grew it from a small, tiny show that I could do in literally a small, like a hall in the Outer Hebrides. And because I don't know how much you know about what the stuff I've done, but the last tour I did a few years ago was arenas, and it was like thousands of people, and it became this huge sort of juggernaut that I didn't feel I was not quite in control of. So I wanted to make the next tour very small and then build it up, and that's exactly what I did. I toured in Orkney and Shetland and places that you couldn't even get a ferry to, and the ferry, there's only one ferry every like a week. So it was it was really much out there. You know, no one goes to these places. No one.
Right.
You know,
I went,
there's a place called Stornoway, which is on the island of Lewis. And when I went on stage, I said, "Hello, I'm Bill Bailey." And there was a stunned silence for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then somebody went, "Oh, Christ, it is actually Bill Bailey," right? Because they thought it was going to be a lookalike, right?
a lookalike.
Oh, they thought like a tribute Bill Bailey was going to turn up, and it was at, you know, and so it gives you an idea of sort of remote these gigs were. And you know, I wanted to make a show that was interesting. It was about something. It was, you know, something universal, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to take it to the States, because I think it's kind of, there's a lot of stuff that chimes, you know, it's that sort of funny. It's the funny that doesn't have to, it's not about local things, it's not about Englishness, it's not about it's about just, you know, other stuff, like about, you know, doubts and doubting the kind of things that you thought of as a kid, and maybe in your 20s and 30s, and then me, I'm, you know, get a bit older, and you start to question the very nature of a lot of the things that you've held as, you know, as the establishment, like banks and politicians, and your view, your outlook on life, it's changing. Everything's changing. And the doubt led me into, of course, Thomas, you know, the original doubter, you know, the doubting Thomas. And that led me to find out that there's a whole history of art based around the doubting Thomas, you know, story. So that, that's kind of grown into like an art lecture, like a spoof art history lecture about the nature of doubt through art in the century. And he sort of, initially I was thinking, is there going to be comedy here? Am I looking in the dark for the funny here? But, you know, sure enough, there it is. You know, it's in the most unlikely places. And that's what I've realized is almost as my mission is to kind of, you know, tease out the unlikely funny from the strangest places. And I think there's, you know, audiences I've found around the world kind of respond to that.
Well, Bill, you know, Lee and myself, we're both stand-up comedians. What kept you going from when you're doing open mic pub at 2 a.m. and you're dealing with guys like sleeping in front of you? Like,
yeah.
What is it that drove you to become this successful that kept you going?
Well, I suppose you have to look to the next gig. You have to think there's something about a gig that you can take away, you know. And right. I think it is that, you know, I always saw that every gig was a learning experience, you know. Even the gigs that don't go that well, you think, well, what was there? Something wrong with it. What was, you know, there was something else I could have done there. And even those gigs when it is 2 o'clock and these guys are asleep and you think, well, what the hell am I doing this for? And is there any point to this? You have to sort of, I know, you just have to keep going. It's like you have to just, you know, keep sort of plugging away and think, you know, that there's gigs. I think the thing is you can't settle for the easy laugh. I think that's the thing that keeps you going. I think if you think, well, I can get laughs like this, then eventually you just get bored with it. Well, I would anyway. And you want to try and sort of get to the next level, in the next stage where you're thinking, I'm not sure about this. I don't even know whether this is fun, but I'm going to try it. And
right.
constantly get yourself out of the comfort zone and put yourself under the pressure. And then you know, somehow it makes it more exciting.
Yeah. No, I understand. I did want to, by the way, congratulate your appearance on Craig Ferguson last night. You were outstanding. You guys are funny together. You guys are really funny. He's a great host, though.
He is a good host.
He has that way of funny with everyone.
And he genuinely likes people. He's laughing
a
lot.
So. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, he's easy to play off of, I think.
Sure,
oh,
for sure.
Now,
I know Craig from years ago when he used to do a stand-up as Bing Hitler. That was his stage name.
Sorry.
So we kind of know each other from a long time ago, and I did a film with Craig about a few years ago called Saving Grace, where I played a small time drug dealer. I don't know why they thought of me like that. That was a real stretch for me.
That's actually a really good movie too. If people,
it's quite fun.
It actually is. You know, about the Dandelion Mind as well. So is this going to be the biggest comedy show ever, bigger than Gervais, right?
Right, of course, yeah. Well, you know what? Ricky Gervais, I think he's a brilliant actor and a very clever writer. And he was, what he did was, you know, the Office was it's brilliant. It's undeniably brilliant. And you know, he then saw this, you know, the success of The Office was so huge, it gave him sort of carte blanche to do anything. It was kind of, you know, it was like, yeah, you could do, I mean, he could have done anything. He could have just gone on stage and done contemporary dance, just done the dance, you know, the kind of, you know, and people were going, yeah, do the dance, do it again, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of, I feel that, you know, he's really made the most of the opportunity to kind of the exposure that he gave him, the kind of respect, the sort of, you know, the reputation that sort of preceded him. I think he's done great, and I think it's actually made people in particularly America. I think there's a bit of an appetite for British humor now. I think that's sort of up the ante a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, fair play to him for that.
I was going to ask you, Bill.
I agree.
American audiences, they are responding as well to you as we are, correct?
At the moment, yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think firstly that perhaps there is an appetite for British humor, perhaps. But also I think that the last few years, we've had YouTube, and YouTube is incredibly influential, I think. But audiences are a bit more savvy now, a bit more comedy savvy.
Right.
You know, they've seen a lot more comedy. They can compare a lot more comedy. I mean, you can go on and, I mean, you can see my life's work, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you can go and watch other comics and check them out and, you know, compare one to the other. So audiences are a bit more aware. The general awareness, I think, of comedy has gone up around the world in the last 5 years.
I think it's also sort of been demystified. A lot of documentaries have been made about the art of it, and now people are offering courses. And now sort of, which I am waffling on, but I wanted to ask it, are you excited for these, when you do these American shows, or people who haven't seen you, like, that's easier somehow because you think to yourself, they haven't seen me. I could do anything. They don't know what I'm going to do. They don't know what tricks I have up my sleeve. When I go into some town and I haven't been there before, I think, all right, I can pull out my whole fun trick arsenal.
What town are you known in, Lee? You go to a new town and they don't know you.
Anyone in Chicago and St. Charles. I've been to St. Charles quite a bit.
Well,
a couple other places.
I'll let Bill answer your question then, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I could just, you go somewhere and just like do a totally different, like do a really blue sort of, like a really, like some kind of stag act in one town, and then you go and do like a ventriloquism act in another act. Yeah, you can pretty much reinvent yourself everywhere you go. I think the show is a piece of itself, so I don't think I can really muck around. I can't dismantle it too much. I don't really want to do that either. I think that, you know, I don't think I've, when I was performing here 10 years ago, I didn't really change too much. I didn't want to sort of, hey, let's p- put some local references in, you know, and that'll really kind of go. I mean, I didn't do that, you know. I kind of kept it as it was, and I think the only thing, actually, curiously, the only thing that's sometimes a stumbling block is very small words, odd words that are different in English, spoken English and American English. I think there's sometimes these curious kind of anomalies between the two, where sometimes people just, you know, we use slightly different words, like, you know, like a bloke, or they'll be like, you know, or just very odd things like that, which can sometimes slow down a routine. And those things get ironed out very quickly. So pretty much the essence of it will be the same.
I've gotten some questions from your fans, Bill, and we talked about this earlier. So they want to know, do you manage your own Twitter account?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
We were talking about that earlier.
So
that is relevant.
He does manage his own Twitter account.
Yeah, it's me.
I would hope a comedian manages his own.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you mean the only reason I do is because when I first investigated Twitter a couple of years ago, there were 4 Bill Baileys on there already. You know, like, so, and one of them, and then 3 of them sort of gave up, but one of them kept going, and he had like quite a few followers. And he was basically pretending to be me. He was like, yeah, I'm going out to a gig, I'm doing this. And people were sending him messages like, yeah, I really like your stuff. when you're coming to Leicester and all this kind of shit. And I was thinking, what's going on? So what I did was, I waited, and then I got some followers. I was real Bill Bailey for a while, because I thought, well, he might suddenly come out with a racist tirade, and you know what I mean? You think, God knows what he's going to do. Is he going to? He might be a jihadist or something. I mean, who knows? Nobody knows. So I had to sort of then say, no, it's me. And of course, you know, one of my very obsessive traits is spelling, correct spelling. And he was an appalling speller. So, so I kind of that really sort of that was enough to let people know it wasn't me, because I go nuts over bad spelling. I'm a terrible obsessive about it. So anyway, so then I flamed him out, and you know, all the followers told him to just, you know, sling his hook. And then he sent me this grovelling sort of message going, oh, sorry, I did it because I was a fan. And you think, yeah, but fans come up to you in the street and go, I really like your DVDs. They don't pretend to be you secretly on the internet. You know, that's weird.
Well, I'm glad someone asked that, because I just want to make sure, because if we get a retweet from Bill Bailey to check out his interview on the show, I want to make sure it wasn't fake Bill Bailey.
Fake Bill Bailey.
Out
no.
Be real.
That's it. It's me. 100%.
Do you know, is he British? Because maybe you could tell when he spells the word color or favorite without the U. You could tell.
Oh,
that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. Like what you did. Yeah, you see? You can see that straight away. No, I don't think he was even as good as that. I think it would be like F-A-Y-V-R-I-T. It was like, you know, this guy was barely literate.
Well, Bill, I know I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I did want to say you are going on the Dandelion Tour here. And once again, let me give out those dates. September 14th through the 17th, he'll be in New York at the Skirball Center. On September 18th, House of Blues in Chicago, which is a great venue. You're going to love it. September 19th, Toronto at the Panasonic. September 20th in Boston at the House of Blues. Then at the end of the year, you're going back to the UK and doing the tour still.
Sure.
So what's in the future then, Bill, after the tour? I know you got a production company. Are you going to be looking at UK projects, American projects, or just both? What's going on?
Well, there's a raft of stuff, you know, in the pipeline. And one of the American projects is working with an American comic called Rich Hall. And Rich and I are going to do a swap. I'm going to show him around the southwest of Britain. He's going to show me around Montana. So it's going to be that's a kind of little doco project. But I've got a music project which I'm working on, which is, I don't know if you know a book called The Songlines by Bruce Chatwin. It's about the Aboriginals, and it's about kind of how the Aboriginals see the world. The outline, the horizon of their world, they sing it. So the kind of the music follows the contours of the skyline. And so it's a huge project where I'm going to do the skylines of London and maybe cities around the world and create music based around the skylines of every city. Wow. And then it's going to turn into like a, you know, it's just a, it's a grand project. And also, I'm going to take the music show that I did, The Remarkable Guide to the Orchestra, and yeah, bring that to the States and play and do a tour of the States with that. So I'm kind of, I'm aiming to do a comedy tour next year and maybe a music tour as well.
Bill, that's going to be huge. That was awesome. Yeah, I love that.
I did too.
I love that.
Fantastic.
I did want to ask you, Fields of Gold, am I going to hear it at House of Blues?
Yes, indeed, you are.
Yes! All right.
Yeah, in your face, you tantric twerp. That's what I'm
saying. That pretentious thing. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bill, for joining
us. All right.
Us. Hope to see you when you're in Chicago. You're a good man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill.
All right.
Take it easy. Take care. Bye.
Cheers.
Good people.
Yeah. Cheers. I like that.
I like rating people after they've been on.
Yeah.
Good people.
Well, yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Talented guy.
He definitely said something which was about trying to make sure every show is a learning experience for you. Because I could tell when he does those little pub shows in Scotland, places like that, that you're getting something out of that too.
Yeah.
Because that's the way you got
to
look
at it.
He's
getting that story to tell on our show.
Yeah, right, yeah. Because that shit is funny, and I don't ever tire of doing those, like, five people in the shitty bar.
Well,
that's a story.
I'm going to play another Bill Bailey clip.
And those are the majority of the shows I do.
I'm going to play another Bill Bailey clip, and then I'm going to get something to drink while that's going on.
I got to open a beer.
I don't know what I want to play, though, yet. I don't, there's so much Bill Bailey.
The musical
that I like.
One.
Oh, yeah, that's
I
know. You got a ton of them, but I mean, they're
the musical
awesome.
One.
You got a ton of them.
Yay.
You know what?
Let's do a couple of them.
Let me tell you something about Alex on this show. I think it can work. He maybe a little coaching, but I think it could be good. We could play off him.
The nicest thing he's ever heard. Yeah. Yeah, you take that back yet, Lee?
Oh, and then he'll say something like, I'm a fascist. Great Hitler, by the way.
Okay.
This is a good...
Right. Okay, this is it then. This is my attempt at a proper ballad in a sort of Scott Walker Slayer tradition. And it encompasses all aspects of love, betrayal, hatred, and depression. And as you can see, for this, I've enlisted the help of the Mr. On Display team. I was alone, my heart was cold, it was a stone, my soul was lonely like a stone, there was no moss. And when I danced alone, but then I did not dance because I was alone, so I did not dance. I shuffled through life invisible to all the happy couples who would mock me with their merry laughter, ha ha ha. The only sound I heard in my lonely silent world was the rusty hammer of my heart, nailing up the hatred in my soul. But then you came, and my life was turned upside down. You showed me the beauty of the things that I had never seen, like a snowflake that melts on the eyelash of a startled deer. Or the painting of the dog that wears a deerstalker and smokes a pipe that made you laugh so heartily, but I previously thought was rubbish. Or the duck that lands so clumsily on a frozen pond in winter, but the intoxicating power of our love transforms this simple act into an anthropomorphic drama where Mr. Duck's embarrassed and the other ducks are laughing. And then you left. And I have died a thousand deaths, and I will die a thousand more. I thought you were an angel. You turned out to be a whore. And everything has turned to dust. Everything is infected with a plague. When you had to sleep with Craig. Oh, he's so sensitive. He's got a tattoo. Yeah, carving your name with a compass in my forehead was not enough for you.
plague on the eye of the deer. It turns a pus that oozes from an open wound. The deer now blind, it stumbles into a ravine. The duck lies shredded in a pancake. Soaking in the hoisin of your lies. The dog has moved from the pipe to 60 cigarettes a day. And coughs away his life in the cold neon research lab of your betrayal. Of your betrayal.
Anyway,
you know you're both on the air.
Yeah,
classless.
I've met some real.
Yeah, go back to where you were, classless.
I've met some classless people from the old. Some of those.
You want to finish that sentence or no?
Did you do that just to put me in the spotlight?
No, you were on.
Funny and nobody liked.
Oh, get out of here!
He set that one up.
That was for Alex,
yeah,
actually.
Right.
Funny.
Yeah, it was for Alex.
I didn't say anything.
I'm not funny.
I don't know what you two were talking about. No. Yapping on the air, gossiping. Caesar really doesn't want us to do another hour.
Yeah.
And he's mad that I got rid of Bill Bailey.
Oh, well, he.
When did you get rid of him?
Dude is doing a job.
He's so busy, it's not even funny.
He's doing. All right. I'm not going to argue via the. All right. Anyway.
I think I'm a classy guy. Well, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Bill Bailey. I did want to say a couple other things. You could find him on Twitter. You can find him on Facebook. I believe he's at Bill Bailey now on Twitter.
On Twitter.
And once again, his show is the 14th through the 17th in New York at Skirball Center. September 18th at the House of Blues in Chicago right here. And the 19th in Toronto at the Panasonic. And the 20th in Boston at the House of Blues.
Check that out.
No L.A. dates, though.
No. Well, it's okay.
Maybe he did already. Maybe I'm like missing something.
I'd like to see him. I'd see him in the
I wanted to give you, the New York Times says he's a treat for the funny bone and for the ear. And then the London Evening Standard, I think, puts it the best. Bailey cuts a world-beating swath of all of his own. Never nasty, never mundane. He is prepared to treat his audience as intelligent beings. What other comedian would tell gags about Caravaggio or use the term cognitive dissonance? Absolute genius on so many levels.
Do a lot of comedians use the term cognitive dissonance?
We're talking about Caravaggio.
I can't even
Caravaggio.
I don't.
Oh,
think
you,
any
you British median, your use of the word swath.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Swath.
He
has his own swath.
Yeah. You were talking about acting. You told me to remind you. Walton Goggins.
Where were we? Oh, so Walt and I were talking.
Uh-huh.
Where were we on this?
You were talking about getting into the character and not committing to anything else.
Oh, yeah, I need to get over that because it's just bad. Steve would meet me up. Steve had something going on. Oh, he was at Columbia. And I was at Piven Theater doing some shows. And I was also at DePaul, obviously. But he'd have class at Columbia. So I'd tell him, take the L all the way to Evanston. There's a stop right outside the Piven Theater. It's literally on their doorstep. Get out, and we'll go to dinner.
Yeah.
So we would do this every week or so. And I was a lot less talkative and not as – it was just hard, man, because you want to be in character and you want to, like, not forget anything. And, like, I wanted to be quiet all the time. It was weird. It was weird.
Okay, listen. I just have this image. You said that you were in Doubt by John Patrick Shanley,
yeah.
And you were the priest.
Yeah.
You were playing the priest in Doubt, everyone would totally believe that you did something to that kid.
There's no
if
doubt.
If he's
There's
played
no
by
more
you,
doubt.
Yeah, no doubt. That would be. oh man, that's good. I'm just trying to picture you with a collar on and all that. Yeah.
I'm trying to look up this other John Patrick Shanley thing I did.
You do have the long fingernails.
Beggars in the House of Plenty. Beggars in the House of Plenty
yeah.
is the other John Patrick Shanley one I did.
Okay.
I knew it was a long, ridiculous title.
Yeah.
And I played one of the lead brothers in it.
Didn't he make the movie Joe versus the Volcano? I think yes. So, yeah.
Yes. Moonstruck.
Yeah.
Joe versus the Volcano. Congo.
Ooh, yeah.
It's off the top of my head. I'm sure he's... I always wanted to do Italian-American Reconciliation.
Mm. That's fun.
But no one does it anymore.
No.
You can't find it anywhere. So,
Alex, what did you think of the interview?
He is a good writer, too, John Patrick Shanley.
Yeah, he is.
I thought the interview was good. I mean, he's hysterical, and all my friends from over in UK and Windsor area and Birmingham area said he is one of the funniest guys ever. Yeah. I mean, he is a legend.
You know everybody.
Seriously, when I went to that International Golf Academy, I mean, these guys over there said he is the guy right now. He's all over. All over.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not all over. I'm on your show.
You're nowhere.
I'm in Downers
You're
Grove.
You're nowhere.
You're nowhere, man.
Trying to get out. Help me.
Help me. He needs someone, not just anyone.
I see dead people.
So, news?
Yeah. Let's do some news.
Want to get to the news right away, though? Or?
Oh, well, you know.
Do you have anything going on you want to talk about?
Yeah, it's just that I've started to seriously meditate to calm my nerves. I'm a bundle of nerves,
yeah.
And I need to, like, I meditate a lot now.
Don't shoot me.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna, but I'm someone that, you said that you're somebody that, like, doesn't get, you're a happy person, you like people, you're positive, you're not one of these, like, stereotypical comics.
I didn't used to be that way.
You're not going to show up at a post office.
I went to anger management when I was younger.
Yeah, I am a stereotypical, I wouldn't do anger management, but meditating's working
out. I went when I was younger.
I'm someone that, I get pissed off just, like, when someone says something.
No, I still can't.
He's staring at me right now.
No, no, no,
Like, sometimes Alex talks, and I have to really fight the urge. To be angry.
We got
to
get you a stress ball.
Oh, but
but and now the news.
Tom Brokaw.
I like that. And now the news.
And now the news again.
I did want to tell you, Nick and I, we were watching TV last night, just flipping all around the channels. And I noticed all the shows do our news bits. So we must be doing something right.
Yeah.
All the shows, Daily Show, Colbert, they're all doing our news bits. So that's good.
Oh, stuff from HuffPost?
Stuff that we did, yeah.
It, you know what? And other podcasts with comics on them make fun of wacky news stories.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Just not as well as me.
But they don't have Terzo. So that's what we got on them.
They don't have Terzo.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
I'd rather not get into other comics than their podcasts. But did you notice, or is it just me, that trend starting to die down a little?
What? Oh, the...
I'm not seeing as many posts anymore and as many new podcasts forming and as many...
Well, that whole thing is going to subside. People looking at shit on YouTube is going to subside. I think social networking sites are going to subside. They're just... It's all going to just kind of...
Yeah, but what's going on
start
with
to
your,
ebb.
All your buddies? I'm not going to name any names, but what's going on with them? I don't see their podcasts anymore, any of them.
Well...
Nobody's listening.
They don't got
them.
Time and...
Well, yeah, it's tough when you... I mean...
Well, you couldn't get a good fucking guest? Ass fuckers. Hey, listen, pal. I got news.
Oh, here we go.
I got news for all these Chicago podcasters out there, you fucking homos. Let me explain something to you. Instead of talking shit about me all the time and pissing in my Cheerios and trying to make me feel bad, why don't you actually just get some guests for your fucking show so people will listen? You'll still have to be funny. I know. That's going to be the tough part. But... you'll get some guests, you'll pull some listeners in, and then maybe, just maybe, you can have a successful show too. Wish you the best. Don't think it's happening anytime soon. And I can hear all the excuses I want. Well, you live at home. Well, so do half of you, Chicago comedians. Well, you do it out of your mother's basement. I'm sorry that you decided to get married at the age of 20 or 25 and don't have a basement. Can't afford anything more than a one-bedroom apartment with you and your slobbish wife. Look, I'm just saying, I'm tired of hearing a lot of shit. behind my back from a lot of people that think they're podcasters and they're comedians and they're doing so well, and why, Matt? How about why not, Matt, asshole? How about why not? You know how much I work? You know how much I work my ass off for this show? Blow me. And it's not just one person. It's many. And I just kind of take a little enjoyment in seeing all these comedian podcasts not have the momentum we have and die down a little. And, you know, no one listens to an hour of their yapping anyways.
That's Matthew Aaron at P.O. Box, Downers Grove, 3005.
Okay, wait a minute.
Send a message.
Wait a minute.
Examples if we want to get really dirty.
That was the first funny thing that Alex ever said.
That was funny. I can give you great examples.
That was good.
I can give you great examples, too, if we ever want to get dirty.
No, yeah.
But I'm not going to.
You don't have to get dirty. Here's the thing. Doing a podcast, it's cheap. It doesn't cost some guys anything. I mean, you get a couple of people together. They play off each other. And then you got a show. But it's just something comics can do in their spare time. You know, it's not – a lot of them aren't going into it with the mindset that they're going to carry it out and have it be this, like – real thing. They don't ever think they could get guests. The guest is going to be another comedian.
Oh, well.
Plus, they don't have experience, A, interviewing people. When you interview people, you clearly know what you're talking about beforehand. This is what blowing someone on a microphone sounds like, by the way, if you're listening. You know how to talk to people and how to interview them and how to get them to say the right things. You know,
hey, it's blowing. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
Listen, here's what I said. I want to bring up Steve Weirich posted. Steve, who does our show all the time, works on the show. The best.
I'm not familiar.
The best. Yeah, you've never met him? Yeah.
Stump to Steve?
Steve said, can someone please explain the difference to me between bragging and promoting what you do? Because I have a phobia of people on my friends list making backhanded comments about me. I don't mind if anyone hates me, just no comments. I used to post about working third shift, and that was considered bitching, not bragging. What I said to him, well, we had a little back and forth. I go, well, now you work on the best podcast ever. Totally bragging. Then he responded, true, and actually I don't do too much talking about that. I punish your listeners enough with talking on the show.
Oh.
Actually, I think I'm just weird. Ever since I heard some people I know may not like me over pursuing a career, it's been a huge mind fuck. I go, always talk about the show and what you do when the chance arrives. Enjoy the good times, nothing to be shy about. And then I also said to him, and then I went off on a rant. And I go, look, 2 years ago, Steve and I sold tickets like door-to-door salesmen for my one-man show. Yeah. I honed my craft within that two-year period.
Yeah, he
period.
Played Queen Victoria. It was amazing.
I honed my craft during that period, and what happened was I started this show after making connections. I decided I was going to call up Caesar. I called up Caesar, and I said, and he was like, where have you been? You've been missing for a month, blah, 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 blah. We were working on another project at the time that we're still working on. But, and I go, I had some thinking to do. And I decided to do this show. I'm going to go spend $3,000 and do this show. I worked my ass off. I made connections with tons of people. I networked. And I think I did pretty well. So I think I feel I deserve to be able to promote and brag. And
right.
If people don't like it, defriend me on the book. Unfollow me on Twitter, and don't come over to my house and ever see me. Because one day, I'm going to be batting away my friends with sticks, because they're fake friends. They're fake friends. There's fake people out there. And by the way, I tell them to call me. Steve's point was, I feel bad, because what's the difference between us promoting our show and all these local bands asking me to come out to the bar and see their act? And I go, here's the difference. We have some people that are accomplished on our show. I told him, call me when you've accomplished something. We're basically opening and closing for headliners.
Right.
That's what this show is.
Right.
We're opening and we're closing. It's a show, yes. It's not stand-up, yes.
Right.
But it's another avenue with that.
It is.
Okay.
I think the more
these kids doing shows at fucking Ballydoyle's don't have anyone opening and closing for them. And they're usually ripping off other people's music or writing really shitty music in their mom's basement, conveniently enough.
Yeah, people go to see those things, though.
And I said to him,
musicians always get people to their shows.
And I
said,
I will come to a musician show when they've accomplished something. Is that harsh? Perhaps. But tell the truth. Every time you get an event invite from some asshole who has his little band or from some asshole comedian, friend of ours.
He could be huge someday.
we don't really care.
Well, I don't think of it in terms of being professional. I think, do I like the person? I'll go watch them. If they're someone that I know really well,
let me tell you something.
I want to see them having fun. I don't care.
I'm going to give you a for example.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this guy a million times. Just a for example. I love John Griffin. I do. I like the guy.
Yeah.
He's a good dude. He sends event invites all the time, just like we do.
Yeah.
Okay, but he sends event invites for Cigars and Stripes with people no one's heard of, right? Okay. If all those friends of his on Facebook were really his friends, and if it was actually like they were stars or they were accomplished enough that people would want to go see them, people would go out and see them. These people are fake. People are phony, man.
Right.
You just got to get used to that.
Well, Facebook affords you the opportunity to be phony in public, though. That's the thing.
Well, now it's kind of making people more paranoid, like Steve, where he thinks Facebook's now, people are being phony on Facebook.
Well, that was good for you to read that, because I thought I was the only one that was that self-conscious. Steve is as well. That's good. That kind of comforts me a little bit.
Well.
But, you know, since we really started doing this show hardcore, I haven't been doing as much stand-up. I've been virtually not hitting up all my major venues.
I have no time.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Cigars in 2 months.
I'm doing all this other kind of stuff. And people must think that I must have ditched the whole comedy scene.
Oh, I'll give you an example. Hobag calls me the other day. They're doing their little podcast, which never went up that I saw.
Did they hear your previous show where you mentioned
it? No.
Oh.
No. This was the other day. This was there. I mentioned them after this happened. So they called me and they decided to tell me that I'm an asshole and I've gone Hollywood and I didn't show up to their birthday barbecue.
On the air.
Yeah, and I won't host shows and this and this and this. And I sat there and took it like a man and defended myself. I said, you know, maybe I haven't been the best friend that I could be. I don't have a lot of time. I'm extremely busy. I apologize that I haven't been making phone calls like I maybe should be, or whatever. And I apologize, but on the other hand, it's fucking horseshit, because I'm a fucking busy person.
Right.
I'm working all the fucking time. And if you're truly my friend, you'll appreciate what I'm doing and trying to do for me and my career, and for my friends' careers, which, by the way, no offense to Lee, but from day one, the first person I asked to do the podcast was Horatio. The second person I asked was Pat Bagdon. They both turned it down. Oh, and the third person was Drew Trilla of Fleecast, and now he hates me too.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to wonder if this hate is actually legitimate on top of it, or if it's just seated in some jealousy too.
It might be.
Success comes with a little jealousy.
And maybe, and let's say it's not jealousy, because I'd like to think deep down in my heart those two wouldn't be jealous, and they're just hurt that I haven't been around. Okay, I'm doing something. I'm trying to do something special here.
People always accuse you of being selfish when you commit to something fully. That's just how it is. When you want to really do something, when you want to really pursue it and really devote all your time with it, you will lose friends. You'll be alienated from the people you know. This is the huge quandary. When you try to really get somewhere, people are going to accuse you of being selfish. If you're that committed to what you want to do, you know?
Well, I think they were really pissed the interview didn't go the way they wanted it to go.
It just goes over in everything, not just entertainment. But
they wanted the interview me hanging up or me bitching and crying, and it didn't go that way, so I don't think they're posting their show.
Oh, well.
So, whatever.
I think you took it, you know, how you should have, you know.
You heard it?
You were respected.
No.
Did you hear it?
No one was around for it.
Oh.
I called either Pat or Steve after it happened. And whatever, I said, play the interview.
You know what,
I told them. They're like, we don't have to play this if you don't want it. I go, go play
it. Yeah, what?
It's 45 minutes of me defending the working man.
Why would they not play it? They clearly called you up and recorded it to humiliate
you. They didn't get what they wanted out of it.
Oh, man. I would let people humiliate me if that's what made them do that. That's the thing. I would have them play that interview. I used to have a column when I was in college, and I basically, the point of the column was, because I was in Olympia, Washington, was to piss off hippies. And I got a lot of hate mail from hippies, and there was someone drew a cartoon of my picture with a dick going in my mouth, and they're like, we're not going to put this in. I'm like, no, put it in. That's good.
How big was the dick?
A huge, huge erect penis. And I said, no, put it in. That's funny. And then I can respond to it. I can work with it. I can play off it. But, you know, What are you going to do? They wouldn't print the dick, people.
Canadian radio station holds win a wife contest.
Oh, boy.
Was she blonde?
What's the wife look like?
Well, over the next month, the Canadian radio station will be holding a win a wife competition, which contestants will compete to win a Russian bride.
I don't know what's funnier, that or the fact that you called it Canada.
I said Canadian.
Oh, I thought you said Canadia.
Is it in the the T dot, Toronto?
Edmonton's The Bear 100.3 has joined a Volga Girl, a Russian matchmaking website, to give one listener a round-trip flight to Russia, 13 nights of accommodation, and $500 to spend to meet a lucky lady provided by Volga. The contest is advertised on the station's website with a picture of a skimpily dressed bride with a blurred face, her hands placed suggestively near her mouth.
Hot.
The text below reads, "We're not going to give this opportunity to just anybody. To weed out the no-hopers and time-wasters, we've developed the application form below. If you're interested in potential holy matrimony with a hot foreign chick, fill it out to the best of your abilities." The very same competition used the exact same wording, from the language about rejecting no-hopers and time-wasters to offering holy matrimony with a hot foreign chick.
Oh, boy.
This already happened, by the way, last Valentine's Day in New Zealand. Only the Rock FM station there sent its lucky winner to the Ukraine, not Russia.
Was that in Saskatoon, Canada?
Oh, boy.
Well, let's play a little.
What does it matter?
That's really far north.
I'm gonna play a little clip of this in a second.
I love that. Like.
Oh, here we go. Tired of looking for love in all the wrong places? Maybe the perfect woman is a mail order bride. Just don't ask for free shipping. You will need due diligence and common sense. Beware. There are many international marriage broker scams. Don't be a fool for love. Step one, have a clean record. The International Marriage Broker Regulation Act, passed in 2005, requires mail-order bride agencies to disclose an American suitor's marital history and criminal background to any potential brides. Going outside an agency to find your foreign bride won't let you subvert this law. Men who apply for fiancé visas must disclose their marital and criminal history to the government. Step 2. Find a reputable agency, one that does not control contact between you and a potential bride beyond charging a small fee for the initial introduction. Scams in Russia are particularly prevalent. Check www.agencyscams.com if you're thinking of using a Russian dating agency. Step 3. Check.
Alex, are you taking notes?
Scout the join date and or last activity marker on the women's profiles. Many agencies don't bother pulling photos of women who are no longer active on the site, meaning you'll be paying for email addresses of women who will never answer you. Step 4. If there is a particularly beautiful woman on one of the front pages, check a few matchmaking competitors. Many sites feature the same models as bait with different names. Don't believe an agency that tells you that your pen pal's account is about to be closed for non-payment of membership dues. The would-be brides join for free. Step 5. Check out any woman's claim that she has or can get a visa. Do not send money for her visa unless you can confirm with an embassy that she really has one, or at least has applied for one. Visa scams are common. Step 6. Don't fall for sob stories from women you're corresponding with. If they ask for money, that's usually a red flag that you're being scammed. Step 7. If you decide to check out your foreign friend in person, book the trip on your own, not through the agency's travel service, which usually offers inflated rates. Learn some local phrases to really sweep her off her feet.
What?
Step 8.
What?
Don't buy into the myth that mail order brides are more compliant than American women. These girls may be looking for a better life, but there's a limit to what they'll do to get it. Step 9. Be realistic. If you're a tubby 55-year-old video store clerk and a gorgeous 19-year-old university student professes to be madly in love with you, well, we don't have to tell you what she's really in love with. Did you know the U.S. Postal Service processes and delivers nearly 703 million pieces of mail per day?
So there is your how-to get a mail-order bride.
Do not taunt Happy Funball.
I love how...
How many rules do you need to get a goddamn mail-order bride?
Well, it's a very complex
process. I love how this website says, you know what? Our whores are better than the other website whores.
Right. Don't
it's
go,
a scam.
Don't
come
go to
come buy our whores.
Don't go to hotoilbrides.com. They'll rip you off.
Yeah.
I like the thing about limits. Like, there's a
ours is a tax donation. We donate to charity.
I love that the picture is with her hands by her mouth and you can't see her face. Isn't that not the perfect woman? No face, just
a
body.
No. The best woman's a blind, deaf, mute.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
With no feet. You don't have to take her dancing. Oh boy.
I really have nothing to say about any of that. Nothing.
Next.
That was good.
That how-to video said it all for me.
Yeah. But that, I mean...
It sounds like Lenny's steps in getting women.
Yeah.
Man asks neighbor to dump dead body in trash. Tacoma, Washington.
I was going to say Chicago.
Tacoma. But, I know all about Tacoma.
But, No, back to the bridesmaid thing for a minute.
Yeah. That's weird.
Who? I still don't get this contest.
Doesn't
though.
It
They'll
seem
hook
like...
you up with a girl.
Yeah. Doesn't it seem like more trouble than it's worth?
I thought Canada was better than that.
Well, I like how they address the issue that a lot of people who might order male brides want them to just be their slaves. And they're like, no, they're not your slaves.
You're my indentured servant.
At first, Lee was like, that's a comedy video.
No.
I'm Megan Murphy for the Huffington Post. Common neighborly requests. Can I borrow a cup of sugar? Got any milk? Uncommon requests. Can you help me dump this body? Police in Tacoma, Washington arrested a 20-year-old man Thursday afternoon after he allegedly approached neighbors asking for help disposing of a dead body.
Well, he was really calm and laughing about it, so we thought it was a joke at first.
The woman says her friend found that body in the trash can a short time later when the suspect allegedly opened the lid as she was waiting to put some garbage inside.
The neighbors contacted the police, who, while investigating, spotted the suspect and took him into custody for questioning. Police checked the bin and found the body of a 16-year-old male. An autopsy conducted Thursday ruled the boy died from a gunshot wound to the head. For the Huffington Post, I'm Megan Murphy.
Mafia. I love that. Tacoma. You would only find that in Tacoma. What were they smoking?
Police in Tacoma, Washington arrested Anthony Tyrone Clark, who shocked his neighbors by asking if he could dump a body in their garbage.
Okay. I like the beginning of that news story where it's
and this where the suggests 20 years old by
where
the way.
It suggests normal things you would ask your neighbor. Can I borrow a cup of sugar or a glass? No one ever asked their could you borrow a cup of sugar? No one ever does that. That's not a thing that anyone does. So the body thing, I think that's more normal, really.
Well, police are still trying to figure out if the neighbors gave him permission to bury the body.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that's the most pressing issue.
Yeah. What? Maybe the person was hefty. They couldn't get them down the stairs. I could see.
First, so, a 20-year-old kills a 16-year-old, gunshot wound to the head.
Yeah.
Drugs. Or sex-related? What are we rolling the dice on here?
I'm
going to say, yeah, it's Tacoma. Have you ever been there?
No, tell me about it. I know you're a fan.
All right. Tacoma is... a little metropolitan city that's got some you know, buildings that are slightly tall, and there's places to go, but the whole place is like a bad neighborhood, kind of like Philly. It's just like one huge sort of outskirt, weird, bad neighborhood town, and I could see this being either related to drugs or sex or both.
Really, bad?
Because you know what? Shit closes early, and you can't ride the light rail too late. And you need to be entertained somehow. So I could see this being...
Yeah, this was on a Wednesday.
There you go.
Wednesday.
Quit watching mob scenes.
You know what, though? I like people getting the neighborhood involved. You know, could you help me carry this body?
Yeah, well, neighborhood watch.
Yeah. You like this one, too? Byron Womack. Womack was arrested after allegedly running down I-65 with a samurai sword.
Oh, man.
I've actually driven the whole length of I-65 before.
You didn't see any black men with samurai swords?
No.
Hang on.
No.
Lee's like, speaking of samurai swords, I'm going to go let mine loose. You're going to like this. How about Edwin Toberta? Butler County Sheriff's Office reports he was arrested after allegedly having sex with an inflatable pool raft.
He was lonely.
I'm looking at you, Louise.
He was lonely.
I was going
to... I mean,
how do you get arrested for that,
though?
You
can't.
You can get arrested for having sex with the raft?
Was it in the privacy of his own home?
That's probably the kicker there.
It was probably in public at a park.
Probably was not in the privacy of his own home.
Yeah. Hey, there's that, arrest him.
Let's see. Oh, boy. Polar bear attacks woman. Oh, I love that.
She probably deserved it. feeding the polar bear, probably.
I guess Lee died in the bathroom.
He fell in.
There he is. There's Lee. You missed. So this guy got arrested for having sex with a inflatable raft.
Oh, you can get arrested for that? Well,
I'm guessing it had to be in public,
why
right?
Why did he do it in the privacy of his own home?
That's what we were saying.
Lee is shocked right now.
Yeah. My face is red. Look at me.
Outback Steakhouse serves booze to four-year-old.
Awesome.
All right. We'll
hear
about that.
That
then.
Is so Australian.
Shrimp on a bobby.
We will hit that then.
Any server, and they'll tell you few things will get you fired faster than serving alcohol to a minor. But a four-year-old? Yeah. That's what happened to a Detroit family at an Outback Steakhouse near Kings Island. The Kerwins were waiting for their orders when the waitress offered free drink samples.
By the way, this has happened in the last, like, 4 months. I could, off the top of my head, Applebee's, Olive Garden, Chili's.
It happened to me when I was in third grade.
Let me tell you something. One giant corporation owns all of those restaurants. So
well,
that,
they've
they
all been caught
fuck.
In the last, like, couple months.
They can pay the fines.
Holds to their party.
My sister asked her if there were alcohol in them, and she said no. So we all took one, and the kids had a couple.
Samples were peach schnapps and vodka. The Kerwins complained and got their meals for free. Restaurant also made a donation to their church and fired the server.
Oh, of course.
Oh,
the
that's
church.
Fantastic.
Of course, this family, by the way, was like, we don't want your money. Give it to Jesus.
Yeah, right. Give it to what? Where was this? What state? It doesn't matter, but.
It's Ohio.
Okay.
Another weird story out of Ohio.
Again,
we're getting
not
the
a lot
same
to do
three
in a,
states.
Not a lot to do in Ohio.
We're getting Washington,
Florida,
Ohio, and mostly Florida.
Florida, yeah. But like, I love that though. How did it come to where the waitress probably gave the girl fucking triple second Smirnoff cocktail? That's craziness. How did the this is what people who pretend to be outraged always say. I blame the parents. Didn't they know? Didn't they know that they were getting...
I want to say. Crack.com has a list of the 5 inexplicably horrifying episodes of classic comedies. Number 5, Punky Brewster, where Punky loses everyone she loves. Punky Brewster was a hit television show during the mid-80s based on the exploits of a socially precocious orphan and her quirky group of friends. Like most 80s sitcoms, the show is known for the occasional, very special episode dealing with topical issues like the Challenger space shuttle tragedy and kids asphyxiating in old refrigerators. But for whatever reason, the producers of the show decided in The Perils of Punky to teach a valuable lesson to the audience about the white man's burden and the horrifying savage magic of Indians.
Well, Punky was into hip-hop culture.
Well, in this episode, the Indians use their magic to get rid of her family.
Okay.
And it's a very special ep.
That's the very special ep for Punky?
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
That was one of them. They did the shuttle. They did the space shuttle one. They did another one.
Okay.
The asphyxiating one.
Yeah.
I played this on Facebook a few weeks ago. All in the Family, Edith Bunker is sexually assaulted on her birthday.
Yeah, that's, yeah. And then next week, everything's wacky. Archie Bunker, yeah.
I just like when Edith escapes the rape because the cake's burning, you know?
Yeah, right.
And the rapist is like, take the cake out of the oven, eh?
Yeah.
And then she slams the cake in his face, you know?
Right.
And, yeah, that was that.
Because Archie's cake isn't going to bake itself.
And then he leaves his tie there, and Archie finds the tie, and she... Jean Stapleton was fantastic.
She was.
Fine actress.
She was good.
But, oh, this is going to sound shitty. I can never take these rape episodes seriously.
Well,
because I just figure it's
you can't convey that kind of thing very convincingly on a soundstage.
No, and not even just the soundstage, in the movies even, too. There's very few.
No, the movies you can use realistic sets and camera angles.
But it's still very few movies can pull it off well, too.
Well, the worst, the best rape scene is going to be probably the worst one to watch, like Irreversible.
The best rape scene?
No, but I mean, what I mean by that's horrible.
Okay,
let me explain.
What?
The one that's probably the most convincing is also going to be the one that's the hardest to watch. Did you ever see the movie Irreversible with Monica Bellucci?
Yes.
Okay. Alex, why are you telling Pat to call in?
See how I have to
It would be funny.
I have to,
for who?
I have to explain this now and look where we are.
There's only 20.
Yeah, now you're considered a rape lover.
All right. I'm a critiquer of
The only thing I saw it well
Did
done.
Did you see
in...
the episode of Lucy where she pretends to have a sunburn so Ricky doesn't hit her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Different Strokes. Arnold and Dudley get molested, and I'm just too tempted. I got to play the clip.
Okay, play.
So guys, what?
You can just have an awful lot of fun with your clothes off. Unless, of course, you live at the North Pole, I'm going to freeze your tush off.
What kind of fun?
Laugh track.
Well, for instance, they're skinny dipping. Either you guys ever go skinny dipping?
Nah, I never done that.
Me neither. Unless you want to count the time when the fire hydrant blew my pants off.
Fun? Listen, guys, if you have not gone skinny dipping, you have missed one of the great joys in this life. I think I got some pictures around here of a bunch of us skinny dipping. You guys are going to love them. Let's see if I can find them. Here they are right here. Here we are down at the old water hole.
Hey, you don't have any clothes on either.
You don't think I'm going to let them kids have all the fun, do you? Look, everybody's laughing and horsing around, having a good time. We had a great, great old time that day.
Looks like fun to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'd like the idea of running around and everybody staring at my bare butt. It lacks a certain dignity.
Well, if you ask me, there are too many uptight, dignified people in the world today anyway. It's time we all let our hair down a little bit.
In that case, you let everything down.
I do want to make mention Mr. Horton. Oh, this is how great Arnold was. He leaves Dudley behind so Mr. Horton can get him with his shirt off.
Have
in the
him
bathtub.
All to himself.
Yeah, or on the bed. I forget which one it was.
The molester sounds like Ray Romano's bookie in Man of a Certain Age, Joe Manfilotti.
No, it wasn't Joe, though.
He sounds Italian.
No, it's a comedian, actually.
Really?
Someone real famous, too. I'm not going to...
Damn it. What,
how am I not remembering this? What was it? What were we talking about? Oh, I did want to tell you, my mother made me watch that as a kid.
Really?
Because she's like, this is very important. Sit down and watch this. And I wasn't like huge on Different Strokes to begin with.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, this is really weird. I know not to go into the back of a bike shop with some old creepy man.
Right.
I'm good.
I was
like 8, but still, I'm good.
I never encountered one situation where somebody in my neighborhood tried to give me candy and get me in his car. That never happened. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but...
I had two younger brothers, and everyone was afraid of my family.
Someone could have done it because I loved candy. Like, I would have went in that car.
No one ever asked you to get into a car?
No,
Alex.
And frankly, I'm a little disappointed.
No,
a little hurt.
No one ever asked me because...
I was a good-looking kid, and it's their loss.
They were afraid of us.
Yeah.
It was like, don't go by the Luisi house.
Well, you were Italian.
They're going to get you.
Your dad would have broke their legs.
Gordon Jump. Who was a comedian? He was the pedophile in that one. And then there was another pedophile episode though, where they go hitchhiking, and they get Kimberly and Arnold get abducted by the some nut job.
Jesus.
But Gordon Jump was the actor in that. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, please.
Yeah, he also played the Maytag man.
Really?
There you go.
Oh, man.
That's where you know Gordon.
That's creepy.
I know the Maytag man.
He's the Maytag man.
Oh,
wow.
God. Imagine getting molested by the Maytag man.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes. It's not bad enough he looks like Lou Grant.
Can I sell you a washer and dryer,
yeah,
kid?
Right. You're going to need to wash the stains off your clothes.
Too close for comfort, Monroe gets kidnapped and sexually tortured.
This episode of the Matthew Aaron Show took a strange right turn.
Yeah. It did. This is Ted Baxter, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't even
next?
Want to play the
Can
clip
we say
of
next?
That.
Can we just say next?
Like, it's just so weird that they have this.
We talk about some, like, big boob girl or, you know.
No, this is fascinating.
It is kind of fascinating.
What do you mean that you cooperated? I'd rather not talk about it.
What?
Does anyone know what's going on here?
I think I do. Those two women were attracted to Moreau. They desired him and helped themselves.
Help themselves to what?
To Monroe. They had their way with him.
So, yes, you too can be molested by two women.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, that was horrible.
God, well,
that was,
of course
know,
you
of age.
Of course you wouldn't mind that.
Yeah. You're talking with two perverts.
And then number one, Different Strokes.
Oh,
Sam gets kidnapped and held hostage.
By the way, Bill Bailey, House of Blues on the 18th.
Sam's missing starts when Arnold gets a new stepbrother, Sam, and immediately begins bossing him around by making him run errands for him. One of these errands, Sam meets a man whose family is in an emotional tailspin due to the fact that her son was recently killed in some kind of accident. He convinces Sam that he needs help finding his lost dog, which is actually just a ruse to take Sam home as a replacement for his dead son. One of the lines in the episode is the guy looks at Sam and goes, "I can't wait to murder you all over again."
Oh, Different Strokes. Different Strokes indeed.
Here's some great acting for you, by the way. Here's Mr. Drummond saving Sam, by the way.
Play it.
Yeah. Conrad Baines saving Sam. 90-year-old Conrad to the rescue. He's still
Sam,
alive.
I'm glad you're finally eating. Now we just have to get him to Gab, and he'll fit in like one of the family.
What's the matter with you, Bobby? Did you catch a quiet bug from old Sam there, huh?
I guess so. Who is it?
Police! Open up. We have a warrant to search the premises.
Get away from there, baby.
We're all under arrest. Kidnapping of Sam McHale.
Sam! Mr. D! Oh, Mr. D, I'm so sorry. I knew you'd come and get me. I knew you would.
We weren't going to give up until we found you.
What's happening?
She had nothing to do with this. My wife and son had nothing to do with this.
It's true.
We'll have to figure this out later.
Sam? Sorry, Mrs. Brown. Bye, Bobby.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can't...
Shit's getting serious over
yeah.
in this Drummond household.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, sitcoms, man. That's the whole point of that. This segment here is these were all sitcoms.
I know.
These were all ha-has.
These were all things where you were made to laugh the whole show.
Are you upset
Imagine
that
going
it's not
that.
Like that anymore, that there is no drama in sitcoms anymore?
Well, I can't...
When it's well done, I'm saying, like Roseanne. Are you upset that it's not like that, that now it's just joke after joke after joke, or what?
I can't imagine seeing an episode like that on a multi-camera sitcom today without it having some sort of nostalgia camp value. Like, I can't see anything beyond that. Like, why would they do it these days? They're trying to get past that old era where sitcoms are hokey. They want to make you believe it's real. So they try to write dialogue the way people talk, and that includes, I think, doing away with the quote-unquote very special
episode. I hear
episode.
You, but you forget the very special episode, though. I'm talking about like shows like Roseanne and All in the Family, which had comedy and drama in them at the same time.
Yes, those did.
And done very well. They don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
So what is your opinion the same on that as it is on very specials?
Well, I think people largely think that those kinds of shows are for comedy purposes only. They don't think that they can be dramatic. They don't. I mean, you watch All in the Family, and like there's some like or Roseanne, there's some real
sure.
wrenching moments there. But I guess people don't believe that that's what those things are for, though.
How are you supposed to care about characters if you don't have a reason?
Well, I think they designate those kinds of shows as comedy, and then for drama, they have single camera shows that are hour long that are designated drama.
I just think it's harder to have people appreciate characters when every single one of them has to be hilarious all the time.
Right.
My opinion.
I agree with that.
Gene Stapleton, funny, but she didn't have jokes.
Yeah, I'm not
she
funny.
She was just
not funny.
Funny. No.
No, I'm not
You're
funny.
Not funny.
No.
But Gene Stapleton's character, Edith, not purposely. Like, they didn't write her all the one-liners.
No.
She's just a funny
she's
character.
She's funny, yeah. When she opened her mouth.
But
she...
you feel for her.
Right.
That's what she said.
Just saying. Nike to release shoes from Back to the Future Part 2.
Yeah, let's hear about this, because I heard about this before.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, why is it awesome?
Oh, the ones from the future?
Back to the Future.
No.
Why
no,
is it
the
awesome,
future
though?
Depicted in Back to the Future Part 2, where you can put a tiny Pizza Hut pizza in the microwave, and it comes out, and it's fully done.
Bing!
By the way, that segment was the weakest part of any of those three movies, where they're in the future in the second one. And the second one is the best movie of the trilogy.
I just want to play a little of that. These shoes, first pair are being auctioned off for $37,500.
I got it.
TMZ reports the first pair of shoes went to British rapper Teeny Tempa, who, for the record, was just 1 year old when the film came back out in 1989.
They were auctioning shoes that were in the movie, not...
I'm pretty sure they're only going to have 1,500 pairs of shoes, and this is no joke, I think they're like $8,000 a pair.
Jesus.
It goes to Parkinson's research.
Oh.
But rumor is they're
How
going,
ironic.
Yeah, rumor is, I don't know if there's going to be a for the streets version. I think it's going to be rich people version.
Okay. So only rich people are going to be able to afford the shoes from Back to the Future 2.
Very possibly.
Okay. You know what? I can live with that. Let the rich have that.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to see a bunch of 18-year-old kids walking around in those shoes. Because
you know what? Those shoes are not like a hoverboard. They don't hover. They don't fly. They're not magic. Let them have those shoes.
All in Naperville, too.
Yeah.
No, because I just don't want to see those kids walking around wearing shoes from a movie they've never even seen.
Yeah. Yeah, something's kind of bad about that.
But they're $20 million, Dad. I need them.
Yeah. God, the 80s was the era of the trilogy.
I was born in the 80s. Great year. 85, Bears.
Yeah.
They're going on sale, but we'll see how much they go on sale for.
Do you agree with me that the second one is the best in the trilogy of Back to the Future?
You know, I it's funny that you brought that up. I have to think about that.
Okay, all right.
The second one was more fun.
Yeah.
More fun?
A little more fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so 1,500 pairs of the 2011 Nike Mag will be auctioned on eBay. So they're all being auctioned, with all net proceeds going directly to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Each day of the duration of the 10-day auction, 150 of the 2011 Nike Mag shoes will be made available via eBay's Fashion Vault. The auction starts September 8th and will end September 18th. So... these shoes are all being auctioned off.
Okay.
Which is interesting, because that now makes me want to check on eBay.
That organization has to promise that when they get the money and say they were able to find a cure, they need to cure Michael J. Fox first. His Parkinson's has to be cured first.
Because yeah, that guy's money, working his ass off.
The money is coming from Back to the Future Part 2, and he still makes public appearances. And I'm a huge fan of Michael J. Fox. I think he was one of... very few truly talented actors of his generation.
The most recent pair of shoes, this ends in 2 hours and 36 minutes, $7,600.
Okay.
God bless.
Let's pool all we've got.
So I'm guessing and by the way, all the other ones, they are at like $500 and stuff, but there's still hours left on those bids.
Yeah.
And I'm sure whoever doesn't get this pair, that'll
try to get that
boom
pair
up to you.
All right.
So
all right, let's go in on it. Us three sitting right here. All right.
Yeah, yep.
I'll wear them on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
I'll sell all my gold.
There's another one, $5,600. Another one, $8,100. Another one, $10,100. Here's another for $9,000.
How do people still have this kind of crazy money to spend?
Oh, because we're lied to all the time.
A bunch of people in suits ripped off the entire nation. How do people still have this fucking money?
We're lied to all the time.
Oh,
people
God.
Have money. People just like acting poor.
It's a tax write-off.
Yeah. There is money. I mean, yes, we have less money as a country, but there's money.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the tax write-off.
Yeah, right.
The tax write-off.
I need them for work. Only to wearing these can I walk to work in an efficient way to get me on time.
Well, I think on that note, after reading the ridiculous price for those shoes, I think that's the end of the show. I can't. Bill Bailey, though, once again, real quick.
Phenomenal.
14th through the 17th in New York at Skirball Center. 18th, Chicago House of Blues. 19th, Toronto at the Panasonic Theater. 20th, on September 20th, Boston House of Blues. You could buy tickets. I'll give you the pricing of the Chicago shows right now if you'd want. $35 a ticket. $12.60 with taxes, I'm sure, and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's probably, what, 48, 47 something?
Yeah.
Bill Bailey was fantastic. I hope you're appalled at these Nike shoe prices.
You should
be. You know what? All that money is going to go to a good cause, though.
That's like 16,000 pounds.
Next week on the show, Pat Tobias, just Larry Doyle on Tuesday, who's one of my favorite writers ever. Lee Rumor on Wednesday, Peter Tolan on Thursday will be rejoining us, and David Krumholt on Friday. And we are working on something that could possibly get done and have a very interesting
Sunday.
A special treat for you, Andy,
Aaron Show. www.thematthewaronshow.com is where you can find all the information from today's show. And I want to thank you guys very much for sitting in. I know it's Friday.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Lee. And I will leave you with this.